In August 1972, Frank Russell was a young Irish Air Corps lieutenant when he set off on his first search and rescue mission. Little did he know that the first time flying in a real mission, the helicopter pilot would almost become his last. What happened during this rescue operation is recounted in the opening chapter of a new book called Air, Sea and Land Memories, A Pilot Revisited. But Frank is also involved in fundraising, and we'll talk about that as well. Frank Russell, good morning to you. Frank, of course, living up in Burren, in the Burren near Ballybon. Frank, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Pat, and thank you very much for having me on.
Delighted, absolutely delighted. This is fascinating stuff, and I had a quick Google search last night, and we'll talk about a few things as the programme goes on. But let's just talk about when you first of all joined the military, when you first joined the Irish Air Corps. At what age did you enter the service?
Well, I joined the cadet school in 1964, Pat, which would be a normal age of 18, would be the average age. And one of my classmates was Jimmy Quinn from Ennis, and was commissioned in 66, and I went straight into the Air Corps, where I did further training to be qualified as a pilot, and that took another 2 years. So, and then in the early 70s, I was posted to the helicopter squadron, and I became a helicopter pilot, and I was a helicopter pilot, search and rescue, and an instructor, if you like, for the rest of my career in the Air Corps.
So things have, of course, Frank, have changed hugely over the time since you joined the Air Corps, because you had helicopter bases in the likes of Casement and in Finnercamp and all over the country. Things have changed. Why were you attracted to the aviation side of it? It sounds fascinating, but why the aviation side of it? Was that something that was in your sights as a young man?
Well, it was actually, as a child, being reared in Blanchardstown, I was always interested in aeroplanes. In those days, the aircraft taking off from Dublin Airport used to fly over our house, so you could never get away from it. And we used to have great air displays in those days in Weston, and I used to go to them. So I always had an interest in flying. And then my elder brother, Kevin, joined the Air Corps ahead of me. So in a way, I sort of followed in his footsteps, if you like.
Yes, and I know that, and I have a massive interest in aviation myself. So you would have been flying the Alouette-3s back in the early 70s then?
Exactly. I converted onto the helicopter, the Alouette-3, which is a French helicopter. It had been in service since 1963. And in fact, just to finish that point, it was in service with the Air Corps for over 43 years. And it never once had an engine failure, nor did we lose any air crew. A phenomenal record.
Fantastic helicopter. I remember it doing a security in Shannon Airport for various big visits down through the years. But getting into the whole SAR side of it, getting into search and rescue, this was a time, Frank, when long before the Irish Marine Emergency Service came in, before the Irish Coast Guard came in, where the Irish Air Corps were responsible for search and rescue.
Well, we were responsible for search and rescue from 1963 for 43 years. And then inexplicably, some years ago, the government decided to privatize the system, and the Air Corps lost its search and rescue, even though in its time it rescued hundreds of people and transferred thousands of air ambulance people. So that's where it is now. And in my time there, I was a full-time search and rescue pilot before I became an instructor, and then I did both, if you like, you know.
Tell me about your very first mission. So being presumably in what do you call it, the ready room, waiting for that call and getting the call, and you were sent on your very first search and rescue mission.
Yeah, well, it was a peculiar day. It was a Sunday. I was on for the weekend, Saturday morning until Monday morning, and my crew of two other chaps, winchman and winch operator. Saturday was quiet, and then on Sunday I got a call early morning to say that two sailors were missing off a ship off the west coast of Ireland, off an island called Inishark, which is in turn further out than Inishboffin in County Galway. And we headed off from Casement and refueled in Clifton, where we had fuel dumps in the old handball alley. But to be truthful, on the way out, we were a bit sort of, you know, disbelieving that the two sailors could be alive after all this time in the Atlantic Ocean. But anyway, we pressed on and got as far as Inishark Island. And as I passed over the western side of the island, I saw lots of small little boats hovering about in the area, and the steel hull trawler off which the sailors had come was a little bit further out to sea. And the next thing, I saw people in the little boats pointing towards the cliffs. Excuse me. So we turned around and had a look, and there was the two men stranded on a huge rock against the face of the cliffs, but it was inaccessible to all the little boats. That's why they hadn't gone in and rescued them before we arrived, obviously. So we did a circus onto the cliffs, near the cliffs, and I put down the winchman, and he put a rope around the first sailor and brought him up. And that's where things start to go pear-shaped. The sailor was a big man, a big bearded man, and when he came on board, obviously he was quite distressed and emotionally distressed and very excitable. And being a transpired, there were French sailors, and being French, he wanted to kiss and hug us all and say thanks very much, which was all very fine at a different place, but not in a small helicopter cabin in the middle of a rescue. And he gave me a slap on the shoulder, on the left shoulder, which caused me to drop my hand on the collective power lever, which is our power. And the helicopter dropped. And I just caught it from hitting his colleague who was standing on the rock beneath me. So I won't say over the air what I said to the crewman to do with the French sailor.
My God. Throw him back in.
Or words to that effect and worse. So he calmed down a bit for a minute, and then we brought up his colleague, but he was more wrecked than the first guy, so he was quite calm. And then my crewmen, who were medically trained paramedics, saw that the two lads, while they were exhausted and half wrecked, they didn't need to be brought to hospital, so we actually put them back under a French trawler, which is about a half a mile out to sea.
So you winched casualties back onto a trawler, which is very unusual, obviously, Frank.
Well, it was an unusual decision, but I listened to my crewmen, who are paramedics, and they said that besides being excitable, they were otherwise okay. And so we literally winched them back down. And again, I was observing this from above. And when I put the big man with the beard down, he again grabbed the winchman and gave him a big kiss and a hug. And I said, jeepers, the sooner we get out of here, the better, you know.
What's the story? Was there mention of a case of whiskey as well?
Well, now, that's the good news. So when the winchman come up the last time, he had a little box with him, and there was, I think there was three or four bottles of Ballantine's whiskey in it as a thank you for us. So that was good fun. And we shared it with the lads in the squadron when we came back.
So very, very close to, temporarily lost control of the aircraft because of this very grateful French sailor whose life you had saved. But what was your reaction to it? Did that frighten the daylights out of you?
I have to be honest, on the day, when you think about it, Pat, we had done some rather serious training in the lead up to my first day on search and rescue. And my boss at the time, thank God, gave me two senior crewmen to accompany me on my first weekend on duty. So that was good news. So these guys were clued in. And but what happened on the day, we hadn't prepared for, nor had any script been written about it. So it did catch us by surprise. And thank God, I managed to collect the power before it dropped on top of the other guy as well.
Wow.
It ended well.
Yeah, the Alouette 3, of course, as you said, a wonderful workhorse and used the world over. Probably a handful still in. I think there was one actually on display in the centre of Paris a few years ago. Do you remember that, Frank? That was, I think, up for auction, an old Irish Air Corps Alouette 3. You moved on then, of course, and I think you moved on to the Dauphin. And I did a bit of Googling last night. I saw you were interviewed when the new era of aircraft was introduced to the Air Corps. So moving on from the Alouette to the Dauphin, was that a big deal for you guys?
A very good point, Pat. It was a huge deal. It was a sophisticated, modern, computer-driven helicopter, and the Alouette 3 would be like, for some of your older listeners, sort of a bit of a Morris Minor, if you like, very basic. But the other one was a huge step up, and it was quite phenomenal, and we got that in 86. And that took over, and it did the job until the such time as the government changed the whole scenario again. So, that was a big step up. You're dead right.
And we've come a long way since with the Augusta Westland and so forth. The book then, where did the notion to put all this in writing come from then? Because this is quite a few years ago, but it's a great story.
Well, first of all, I have to blame COVID-19 for it in that sense.
Yeah.
I was in lockdown up in Ballyvaughan, and like everybody else in the country, and I had to start thinking of what to do, particularly the second time leading up to Christmas. And I obviously had written some stories over the years, but in truth, I had just done them for my family and my friends and my relations to let them know what sort of madness I got up to in my youth, if you like, you know. And so I contacted Colin Hayes in Ennis Diamond, who had written a book called The North Clare's Fight for Irish Freedom, and I read it last summer, and it was a phenomenal book, and I noticed that Colin had self-published. So I rang him during the autumn and asked him, would he be interested in looking at some of the stories I'd written and sort of putting them together as a little booklet for my family? And the rest is history. Colin read some of my stories, and instead of talking about a booklet for the family, he actually sort of pushed me in the direction of making it a slightly bigger book with more photographs for more general readership. And that's exactly what happened. It became from a leaflet or a booklet, it became a real book. And I have to say, I have to thank Colm for pushing me along that road.
Well, there is a huge interest in the whole search and rescue and the military and the Air Corps and the wonderful Air Corps we have. And I know where it's developing all the time with the PC-12s coming in lately. So people will be interested in that kind of thing, Frank, definitely. But when you went on from there, actually, I'll go back to that if I can. Tell me about the Cancer Centre in Westmeath. You're raising funds for that through the book as well.
So that's the whole point, Pat. The sale of the book, every penny I get from it, will go to the Lark Cancer Support Centre, which is based in Multifarnham, County Westmeath, near Mullingar. And my interest in it is due to the fact that in 1998, I got cancer myself, neck cancer. And I had to get a serious operation and lots of radiotherapy, etc. And that was that. But I was given, when I was leaving the hospital, I asked, what are my chances? A lot of cancer patients will ask the same question. And I was told I'd be lucky to have 2 years. So the good news is, here I am talking to you 21 years later, and that's still there. But so 2 years after that, I came across a young lady whose family I knew, and she also was recovering from cancer. She had a double mastectomy. And she told me over lunch one day that she was going to open a cancer support centre to help people specifically who've been psychologically traumatised by their cancer. And that's an issue that was not being dealt with in any great shape or form 21 years ago. And she said to me she's going to open a centre. So me being an alpha and she being a lassie in her 30s, I sort of said to her, would you not think of just sort of taking it easy and let the dust settle on your recovery? And she said, no, I'm going to do it as soon as I can. So she was a business lady and she knew how to plan things and that. And she decided to set it up in the Mullingar area. And I asked her why Mullingar. Of course, I didn't ask her why not Ennis, but Mullingar. And she said, well, it's the centre of Ireland and people can come to us from all over the country. It's very accessible. So I said, fair enough, that's logical. So she worked through the summer of 2002, even though she and me were both sort of still in treatment, as cancer patients will know them saying there. And she bought a house in the area which would have been suitable for residential courses. And she put 100,000 of her own money into it. And it opened officially opened in September 2003, and it was opened by Mr. Brian Lenihan, TD, who was the Junior Minister for Health at the time. Except there was one tragedy, and a week before the opening, Aoife Burke was the girl's name from Tipperary. She died of her cancer, and the family asked me, would I help with the opening? And of course, I was on part-time work at the time in my recovery. And of course, somebody said to me, you're doing nothing next week. And I said, okay, and I did. And the rest is history. I became involved very directly with Lark at the opening, let's say. And I've been I've been helping it since, like hands on where fundraising is concerned. So that's the book, and that's why I want people to buy it, and the money will go towards the Lark Cancer Support Centre.
Very good. That's the Lakelands Area Retreat and Cancer Centre, yeah. Lark in yeah. Multifarnham. I meant to ask you earlier, when you retired then from the Air Corps, Frank, you were a commandant at that stage. You went on to work for their Accident Investigation Unit, I believe.
That's it. So around about the time, or shortly before I got cancer, I joined the Air Accident, which was a new unit within the Department of Transport, the Air Accident Investigation Unit. And I stayed there until 2009. And we used to investigate air accidents and or serious incidents and then write our own reports. So that's where I got the interest in starting to write, if you like, as well.
So aviation, it really, really does run through your veins from those times in as a young fellow in Blanchardtown and the planes flying over you every day. Frank, the best of luck with the book. Well done to you. It's a fascinating story, and thank you so much for your time, and enjoy the wonderful sunshine up on the burn today.
Pat, can I just say one thing, if you don't mind?
Sure, sure.
It's just where you can get the book. At the moment, it can only be got directly through Colin Hayes in Ennis Diamond by simply ringing Colin Hayes Prince. And it's also available in Spar and Siobhan's petrol station in Ballymore.
Very good. And I have a number here for Hayes Prince. I'll give that, Frank. Thank you very much for your time this morning. Retired Irish Air Corps Commandant Frank Russell. Thanks a million, Frank, living up in Ballybohan now. Hayes Publishing in Ennis Diamond. Telephone number is 065-707-1125. 065-707-1125. Or email info@hayesprint.ie. info@hayesprint.ie. And costs just €20 plus postage. But that money, of course, funds going towards the Lark Cancer Sanctuary in County Westmeath.